Well, the good news is that there couldn't be a more appropriate time in my life to be doing this sermon on holiday blues, depression, sadness, and all of those issues. Right now, personally, going on in my life is most of you know, except for guests, we've been having a very difficult struggle with my mother-in-law's dementia and what that has done to my wife. And one of the things that love means is when my wife is unhappy, I'm unhappy. And that's not some kind of toxic codependence. That's how you feel and care about people you love. We are on these journeys together. But as they say on television, that's not all, folks. We had our cousin Stefan in the hospital with an infection in his spine, and we didn't know what it was, and I was very worried about him. He's not as young as he used to be. I think he's 64. And then we had cousin Sam, who's also 64, who fell and broke his femur. And I wasn't worried about him. I felt for him, but I wasn't worried about him. But the doctors didn't like the way his femur looked. And so on Friday, I was with him when he met with the oncologist and the surgeon. And he has adenal carcinoma, stage 4. And I was sitting with him when he got that news. And it is, for most of us, the idea pretty overwhelming. And so there's a lot going on in my life. And I'm happy to report to you that I'm not okay. And I'm okay with not being okay. The price of love and of caring about people is that you feel some pain. You feel some anxiety. You feel some connection to what is going on with the people you care about in your life. I would not have offered the medication, take a medication, not to feel the pain and the anxiety. Yes, yes, I know it's not all about me, but it is. Because when we are involved in these situations, it doesn't do any good to feel guilty that, well, you know, I'm still pretty well, and what right do I have to be sad for what they're going through? Well, every right in the world, because the good news about life, love, relationship, community, is we go through these things together. The aging of the Pumphreys or the Theberts and their changes in status touch the hearts of the people who know them. And I wouldn't have it any other way. That's the price of love. And it's a cost that is worth paying. And so I look around at what is going on with my family, and it's a ride. And it's a ride that fortunately I don't take alone, because I have friends. And I have people who support me, many of the people in this room. This is why we go through these journeys and these troubles together. All of us go through difficult times. I was talking with an old friend, and I mean old in both ways. He's going to be 89 next week, and I've known him for a pretty long time. And he said, you know, at a certain age, it's just one damn thing after another. And I said, thank God, because if you got all the damn things at the same time, it would be overwhelming. And so we also have seasons where we get all the damn things at the same time, and it is, in fact, overwhelming. And we struggle with it, but it's important to understand that the pain, the anxiety, the worries, the tears, the hopes, the wild ride we are on, these are all appropriate responses to the seasons of our lives. We talk about the holiday blues. And a lot of people get the holiday blues, and there are a lot of theories about why we get the holiday blues. Pretty good theories in the northern hemisphere. As the days grow shorter, as the light gets a little dimmer, as anxieties just seem to grow. I don't know about you, but when I'm driving, as it gets dark earlier, I find a more frantic pace out there on the roads. I find not the Christmas or holiday spirit, but a lot of kind of anxiety out there that I don't think I'm projecting. I think I'm seeing it in how people just are tense and angry and impatient. And I think there's something that is built into us. We are like sunflowers. We are heliotropic creatures. We seek out the sun. We seek out the light. We seek out the warmth. And as those days grow short, there is an understandable anxiety, and that's about the physical dying of the light. There's also the emotional dying of the light. Those seasons, and they may not come in winter in the northern hemisphere, they can come on a bright, sunny day in the spring, where it's midnight in the soul. Midnight in the soul does not have to be midnight on the clock. And midnight in the soul does not have to just last an hour. It can last 3 hours, 6 hours, 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months. Let's hope not 6 years. But we go through those emotional seasons where the light, the fire, the enthusiasm seems to go away. We seem to get closed in. When I talk to people who have depression, or who have gone through depression, they almost always are dealing in metaphors of darkness, of just feeling closed in, feeling in a cave, in a tunnel, and not seeing the light. And one of the things that friends are for is to remind each other of the light, to remind each other that, yes, darkness comes, and pain and loss are an inevitable part of living, but as the Bible says, the sun also rises, and light and warmth do return. And those seasons of the skies and those seasons of the heart do change, and they do eventually turn. And it's important not to deny the pain, not to overanalyze or over-medicate the pain, but to accept the pain as part of the cost of what it is to be a human being. We talk about the holiday blues, and some people give the kind of normal capitalist analysis, which is, well, we have the holiday blues because we just can't buy all the things we want to buy. And, of course, I feel that way, too. I can't buy all the things I want to buy. I don't find that that bothers me more than a microsecond. We have the holiday blues, others say, because we aren't receiving the things that we want to receive. And that's only true in one area. It's not true of any physical gift. It's true only of the gift of love and respect and company, because, as I plan on circling back to, those are the only gifts that are important. You heard the young lady up here. I hope my family and friends love me. I think she would not have said that if she didn't know the answer. But it's still a request that all of us have some need to be reminded of the things that we actually know, which is that we are loved, we are worthy of being loved, and to say to each other and demonstrate to each other, not through gifts. Gifts might be symbols of love, but like status symbols only convey symbols. They don't convey status. And gifts might convey a sense of priorities or of guilt, but they don't actually fill the needs. And people sometimes get the blues because they gave a great gift and it didn't seem to accomplish the intended purpose. Or they received a great gift and it didn't fill the hole. Well, gifts other than self and time don't do that. The other part of the holiday blues that people talk about, aside from the dying of the light and seasonal affective disorder, if you can change holiday blues to something that really seems to be medicalized, it makes it much more real. So seasonal affective disorder. But aside from that, there's also the nostalgia analysis that many people give. The idea that, well, you know, we're just sad in December because it's just not the Hanukkah of our youth. It's not the Kwanzaa of our youth. It's not the Christmas of our youth. That the families that we had and the memories that we have changed, have gone, have moved on. And there's some truth to that. That can't be recaptured, but it can be played, the DVD in our heads, and it's still not the same, but it is still accessible. There's also the tougher one, and that is we mourn the holidays and holy days that we did not have. That when we look at the pictures of how Christmas or Hanukkah was supposed to be, when we hear the stories, when we look at the movies, and we think, well, mine really wasn't like that at all. We mourn both what we lost and what we never had. And I think that there is some truth to that. But the deeper issue, I think, really is tied to these issues of light and how difficult it is to travel through the physical seasons and the emotional seasons. How it is that sadness can pile on and pile on until we think we're going to break. Helene, actually just yesterday, said, with all of the things that are going on in the family, she said, the phone rings and I jump. I'm just afraid to answer the phone. I understand that. The ringing of the phone is a Pavlovian experiment come true, that she hears the phone and she associates it recently with bad news to terrible news to catastrophic news, and she twitches. It's so important to accept the experience, even when we want to flee. It's also important to know, at least intellectually, and that can sometimes help just guide us and help us in these moments, that in our society, we tend to use the word depressed and sad as if they were synonyms. They are not. Sad is sad. Sad is a mood issue. I can feel sad a couple of times a day. It's not scary, it just isn't pleasant. Depressed is something clinical and deeper. Sadness can pile up and overwhelm and morph, but for the most part, they're really different phenomena. And so I will tell you very clearly that I am sad, and I am at times a little overwhelmed by the pain in my family and the pain in our extended family, but not depressed. When you keep functioning, when you keep getting up and washing and cleaning and engaging the world, you are working through the pain and the sadness. When it is overwhelming and paralytic, then it's time to seek help, and not seek help from what most people do, which is to self-medicate. Now, some self-medicate with retail therapy, and you all know what that is. Let's go out there and buy, and whether for self or others, that's not the gift that fills the needs or will change sadness to joy or depression to just mere sadness. We medicate with alcohol. We medicate with other drugs. And the definition of abuse, and this is not a moral judgment, this is just an observation, is, so I'm not arguing against drugs and alcohol. I don't know if I should go on with that paragraph or not. But let's just put it this way, that after I got the gout, my pharmacopoeia just grew and grew and grew. When you use drugs for appropriate purposes, that's one thing. But the definition of abuse and whether it's credit card or drug or alcohol, is when you try to use something to fulfill a need that it just can't do. That's when you're abusing it, whether a credit card or a drug or any other kind of substance. And almost everybody does it. You might notice that I'm out of my size 42 longs and into my 44 longs. I understand that I do it too and have to pay attention and deal with the pain in a more sensible and healthier way. But that's not a moral weakness, and sadness is not a moral weakness, and depression is not a moral weakness. These are reactions to what happens to our bodies and how we react to life itself. A lot of people will medicate in order to not feel. There are a couple of things that we can do with the pain, with the sorrows that can otherwise overwhelm. Sometimes people try to learn to transcend them. Well, I don't mind the pain. Somebody wants to punch me in the stomach, I'm going to build up my stomach muscles so that I don't mind. Okay, that's an option. The other is to transform the pain, to take it and do something with it, to take it and spin it back in a way that is constructive. That obviously is kind of the better thing to do. The example that I use and is an inspiration to me is Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa was a pretty unhappy person. She had had an experience of God in her youth and spent her entire, whatever that means to any of us, and spent her entire life trying to recapture that thing that had filled her heart, that had illuminated her, that had animated her, and it was absolutely a real presence to her. And she chased it for the rest of her life. And she spent her life of service, and people argue about what she chose to be of service, taking care of the poor and dying instead of taking care of the poverty and the causes of poverty. Those are both good things to do. And you go where your skill set and your emotions take you to go. And she spent her life both looking to fill her heart again and filling her heart with service, filling her heart with the gift of her enthusiasm, her passion, her caring, her values, trying to make her life make a difference even with all of her pain, or maybe because of all of her pain. That's how you take it and don't transcend it. My job is not to mind that there is poverty, not to mind that there is injustice, not to mind that there are people out on the streets. No. My job is not to transcend the information, the emotional and moral information. My job is to transform it not into rage, but into love, into programs, into caring, into eye-to-eye, hand-to-hand, heart-to-heart contact. My job is to believe in the sunrise. I spoke with another cousin yesterday, who was calling and asking about Cousin Sam, a cousin whose husband had had profound suicidal depression and had been in the hospital and in a locked ward. And she said to me, "I can't tell you how much it meant to me when you said that you had seen people in his condition come back, because I didn't believe that there could be light at the end of that tunnel. I didn't believe that he could come back to be the person that he had been before he cracked." That, when I had told her that a couple of years ago, I wasn't making it up. I wasn't just trying to give her happy talk, oh, there's always hope. Sometimes there isn't hope. But what we say to people, and things that we forget that we have said to people, and how we support each other, and what it is from our own lives and experience and pain and happiness and journeys that we share with others, touch people in ways that we can't possibly know. Like Mother Teresa, working out of an emptiness in order to fill the lives of others. It's something that's so important that when we see each other, we look at each other carefully. We look at what our gifts are that we can give each other. And we don't have to be perfect in order to give a gift of energy, of caring, and of hope. Now, sometimes the message is a tough message, and all we can offer is company. Sometimes when the doctor comes in and says, well, here it is, and you're smart, but I got to put it into words, the prognosis is grim, and then the doctor made a slight joke because when Sam was served bacon and eggs, and he looked at it and he looked at the doctor, and the doctor said, I wouldn't worry about the cholesterol. That's a pretty good message also sometimes. Now, I'm not giving you medical advice here, but it's also pretty good to make sure that when we're down, we don't forget the things that nourish us, that we enjoy. That when we have a sense of our own finitude or the finitude of people we love, that we don't absolutely, as some kind of maniacal duty, feel that we have to sink into nothing but pain. There's still joy. There's still jokes. There's still the reality of life. There's still all of these things that we give to each other. It can be cold out there. It can be gray out there. It can be cold and gray in here. And our job, as the Unitarian poet E.E. Cummings said, is to blow upon the embers of the heart, each other's hearts, to fan those embers into flames, to cause a little bit of life in a dark corner of people's lives, to give a little bit of warmth in a dark corner of an otherwise cold universe. And that warmth, that light, that love that we give to each other counts profoundly. We help each other with the sunrise, lifting the veil of tears, lifting the clouds from the sky, opening up the tunnel so that people can see the light and believe in the light. And even if we know that that tunnel is going to end in darkness, there is still, while the light still shines, so much that we can do for each other and for the world. That when it becomes not about me, but about my legacy, what it is that I do, what you do, for our children, or for our grandchildren, or for the world, or for the planet, or for peace, or for justice, like Mother Teresa, what we choose, what we do, what we love, not with great grandiosity, but as she put it so beautifully, I don't do great things. I do small things with great love. That is how we each warm the universe and bring the sun back into the sky.